What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Stage Right Podcast. This week, we have the man, the myth, the legend, our bus driver for Iration, Gary Peterson. How are you doing, Gary?
Pretty good. Good to see you, Chris.
It's good to see you too, man. It's been a long time. It's been a few months now.
Yeah, it's well, yeah. No, it's was it end of summer last year was the last tour with you guys?
I think it was, which is a sadly long time ago.
That was over a year ago. We ended in Santa Barbara Bowl.
Yeah.
And that was, yeah. I believe...
It was in September.
Yeah, it was. I think it was the 28th, maybe?
I think you're right. So on this podcast, we are going to try to take stories from Gary, who he swears he has no stories. We all know that's not
true. I'll make
some
up. You know?
Yeah. But he's toured with everyone from Judas Priest to Iration to hopefully many more that we'll learn about. So we're going to try to get everything we can out of Gary on this hour-long podcast.
Even some of the guys you know.
Some of the guys I know. That's true.
Exactly.
All right. So we started off our last podcast like this. I'd like to start this podcast off in the same way, because it's kind of our theme here on the Stage Right Podcast. We talk about bagels and the proper...
We ask everybody, how do you prepare your breakfast bagel? What kind of bagel you go for? What kind of schmear you prefer?
Do you go for the salmon, strawberry cream cheese?
Do you go with toppings, or do you stay classic?
Add an egg.
I used to eat bagels.
That's right. You're fit now.
Yeah, with just cream cheese.
What kind? Is it Philly? Is it original? Is it whipped?
Whatever was there. Just the regular cream cheese. You know, you're getting it at a hotel, you take what they get.
Because the big fight here is between Los and I, because I'm a strawberry cream cheese guy, and Los is all Chris about the original.
Chris likes to have strawberry cream cheese on the bus, and I think it takes up way too much fridge space on the tour bus. Those things are tiny, and you got this container of strawberry cream cheese. It's disgusting.
Yeah. And he's the only one that eats it, right?
No, Nijo. Nijo's on with me.
Yeah, that's right. We got two people.
Nah. Yeah, Nijo eats like a child, because he drinks Welch's grape juice in the morning. Hot pockets.
And a strawberry, Pop-Tart.
Hot strawberry cream cheese, applesauce. Like, he is the
What's wrong with
child.
Applesauce?
Oh. Nothing wrong with applesauce.
I love applesauce. Me too, you guys man. Have like Cocoa Pebbles and things like that too? I don't know.
That's all Nijo. Oh, boy. So I want to ask, how did you get started in this industry, Gary? Like, how did this whole journey start for you?
It started in 92 when I owned my own truck.
Okay.
I always wanted to, you know, get into this industry. I owned my own truck, and I leased on with a Stage Call.
Gotcha.
And that was my introduction into it. The first tour I ever went on was Genesis, We Can't Dance.
Wow.
That's a hell of a tour, man.
That was, yeah. And then I went from that to U2. What was the name of that one? The Zoo TV tour. Okay. I did the Pink Floyd tour, the Division Bell tour.
Oh, were you driving commercially at this point? Just driving gear in the back of your 18-wheeler?
On Genesis, I was on an advanced team for the stage.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So we went to every other show. Zoo TV, what were we doing that? We did stage. I think we went to like every third show because they had three stages. They just leapfrog.
Okay.
Yep. And same thing with Pink Floyd. Just did every third show with the stage.
Unreal, man.
And then how did you transition from just hauling gear into driving the tour buses? And what was the reason for that?
Well, because my ex-wife and I used to drive team.
Mm-hmm.
And then when she got pregnant with our first child, we were on tour at Bette Midler. Matter of fact, and she came off the road, and I came off the road, started working in the office. I ran our office up in Vegas, and I did all the local driving and ran the office up there. And then they transferred me down here. And then the company started downsizing, let a lot of us go, and I got out of the business totally. And then in 2009, when the economy tanked, I lost my job. I was out of work for 8 months. And didn't really want to go back on the road. I had four kids, but I needed to live. So I had my ex-brother-in-law helped me get onto a bus company he was with, because I had helped him get into the trucking industry in this, you know, doing this.
Nice.
So he returned the favor and helped me get into bus. And that was in 2009 and been here since.
What are a couple of your most memorable tours or artists that you've driven for?
Probably, and don't take offense, but
no, of course not.
probably the most fun I had was the Judas Priest tour a couple years ago.
I knew you were going to say that.
Oh my God.
I saw that.
And only because, you know, I drove the band and we did all day drives.
Okay.
And I mean, those guys were just so much fun. And we stayed at some really nice places. So it was a cushy job because, like I said, you know, we'd get up in the morning, leave the hotel, drive to the next hotel.
Yeah.
Then, you know, come dinner time, I'd take them over to the venue, stay for the show. After the show, we go back to the hotel. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, you know, and those guys are just so much fun. I mean, I know they're, you know, people have this idea of heavy metal and all that stuff, but
dude, they're the nicest guys. Every heavy metal band.
We laugh so much and loved going to KFC. You know, and we actually started a joke where everybody kind of got into it. Cause I had said to the tour manager, I said, you should get KFC to sponsor the tour. Like we get the bus wrapped, you know, and stuff. And then somebody suggested that, you know, cause you know how KFC was doing those celebrity Colonel Sanders.
Right.
They said, well, they get robbed to do a celebrity Colonel Sanders.
Oh my God, that would be amazing. You know?
And so then we all started, and the name of the tour was Firepower. So somebody had come up with the idea that Rob, well, one of the songs, you know, their songs, which one is it? My mind's going blank here.
I'm too young for this, so this is all you, Gary.
Oh, shoot. What's the name of the song? I hope you can edit this out. Well, they had the song, was it Rockin' After Midnight? I think it was Rockin' After Midnight, but or Living After Midnight or something. I forget what the exact title, but we said they should change it to, you know, KFC would have to extend their hours and there could be Chicken After Midnight. Oh, no. Wait. The song, You Got Another Thing Coming.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, somebody suggested they change the lyrics to "You Got Another Wing Coming."
Oh my God!
You know, and this went on for a while. Everybody was just coming up with these ideas. You know, while I was going down the road, and you know, everybody's just throwing in their ideas and you know about different things, and it was hilarious. You know, but it was funny. Yeah, we stopped at KFC a lot. So
that's so funny, man.
That's awesome.
But and then I while we're on the subject of Judas Priest, because I told you I had something actually that. It's kind of exciting. I could.
That's right. You did. You texted me.
Well, I explained we did all day jobs. So I was at the show every night, which is unusual for a bus driver.
Completely. Yeah.
Usually we're sleeping, but yeah. Because you know, we did all day drives and I was taken right back to the hotel. I was at the show every night. So they knew I was a photographer. So they asked me to shoot the show. So I would do that, you know, most every night, shoot the show. And of course, then I gave, you know, because I'll shoot any band to let me shoot. I mean, I know I've shot you guys.
Some great shots, too.
And, you know, I always give all the photos to the band. You know, I give them access to all the the good ones anyway. The crappy ones I just delete. But so the woman from Judas Priest's office, I've been talking with her last couple months. And today she emailed me and she asked me if it would be okay if they use a couple of my pictures of Glenn Tipton for an interview he did with Spin magazine.
Wow. Oh, that's awesome.
So Spin, I got two pictures that are going to be in that interview in Spin magazine.
Congratulations, dude.
Gary. That's
right. Yeah, so I was pretty excited, but those are going to be my first two published photos. And, you know, of course I'll get photo credit, so.
What a great first publication, too.
Yeah, and that was a nice, nice way to start the weekend, you know, even though every day's pretty much the same.
Yeah, and with one of your favorite artists that you've toured, man.
Yeah, I got a lot of good shots with them.
Means a lot, man.
And then, but going back to favorite tours, I did the Monkees tour a few years ago.
Okay.
And I had Mickey Dolenz on my bus. You know, that was, you know, I mean, you can't be starstruck being in this business anyway. I mean, because,
sure.
You know, they're people. You know, yeah. And we all know that, and that's how we relate to them. But
exactly.
it was kind of surreal to have Mickey on my bus.
Completely.
Because you know, I remember the first night I picked him up, I was in the hotel room, and the tour manager texted me, said, "Would you mind going down to the bus to meet Mickey Dolenz?" I'm like, "Well, no," you know.
Definitely but, not, yeah.
We were in a hotel in Cambridge, Mass.
Okay.
And we had the buses parked inside. So you couldn't run the generator, you know, there was no shore power or nothing. So, you know, I had all the lights off and everything else. So I go to the bus, I open the door, I get on, I flip the 12 volt master switch, which turns on all the lights. And I hear this voice from the front lounge say, "Oh, is that all it is? Just a switch?" So Mickey was sitting in the dark on the bus waiting for me, you know? So, but that was a fun tour because we did all day drives on that one as well.
Man, so, that's so rare. That's awesome.
Yeah. And every night we'd get back to the hotel, you know, Mickey would say, "Hey, Gary, you know, come down to the bar, have a drink." I'm like, "Okay." You know, so every night him and I would be down there. One of the other drivers might come down once in a while. But I'd just sit there and listen to his stories, you know, and he's got plenty of them.
That's surreal, man. Yeah, I'm sure he does.
And, I mean, we'd just, we'd have a couple drinks and, you know, he'd always pick up the tab. And
what a nice guy.
That's so, awesome. Yeah. I mean, and he is such a nice guy. I mean, the Mickey you see on the show, that's him. I mean, that's him in real life. And, but
that's really cool
was,
when that happens.
That was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed that tour.
That's amazing. That's unbelievable.
That's some good ones right there.
Yeah. So Gary, one of the points of this podcast is as much as
there's a point to it.
There is a point to it. It's a subtle point, but there is a point.
It's a small point.
Yeah. But we try to educate people who are trying to come into tour for the first time or trying to be techs or people on the road about
Don't do it.
I want to talk
a little bit, kids.
I want to talk a little bit with you about bus etiquette and what your biggest pet peeves are with like a band on the bus, like how they disrespect your space or anything like that.
Or just advice that you want to give to people that are maybe like touring on a bus for the first time and you can kind of mold them into what you want an ideal passenger to be like, you know.
Obviously pooping in the bathroom, you can't do that. No number two.
I'll tell you one thing that I've noticed lately that used to happen all the time that doesn't happen as much anymore. There was usually always at least one person on the bus that would check on you before they went to bed, you know, see if you needed, you know, coffee or water or banana or nothing.
Something.
Yeah. And, excuse me. And that's kind of, doesn't happen that much anymore.
Oh, man.
Which I don't know why. I mean, cause I had on, Shinedown tour, we got a new guitar tech in. And he noticed every night when I came back to the bus, I'd make half a pot of coffee. This is before we had Keurigs, you know. I'd make half a pot of coffee. So, like, I think it was, like, the third night I come back to the bus, the pot.
There's half a pot
made.
Of coffee.
Yeah.
Oh, dude. Made,
you know, so he took it upon himself to, you know, just have that waiting for me, you know. So, but pet peeves.
Where to start?
Yeah, really. Water bottles.
Okay.
Water bottles everywhere. I mean, on the couch, in the cup holders. I mean, they're just, and for me, I don't know if it's this for any other drivers, but in the bunks, like when we go to change the bunks, you know, because sometimes depends on the tour. Sometimes, you know, I tell the tour that, hey, you know, I can put new sheets out. You guys can do them or, you know, we can plan a date. I will do them, you know, and some people don't want you going in the bunks and, you know, that's fine. So I give the tour their choice, however they want to do it. But when I go into to change the bunks, to change the sheets,
and
I mean, there's like water bottles all stuck along, you know, beside the
arsenal,
mattress, and you got to take them out before you take the sheets off, and it's just a pain. And like, you know, bottles, like open bottles or cans left on like the table or somewhere where it can just slide off.
Yeah.
You know, on the counter.
Yeah.
You know, my bus has drawers that open for the refrigerator, but before I had, you know, a regular swing door and it did have a strap where you're supposed to snap it.
Click it.
Keep it closed. And I can't tell you how many times going down the road, I'd hear crash, you know, because the door swung open, bottle would fall out and break.
Oh, man.
But yeah, lots of times, I mean, because, you know, before I come back, I mean, before I start driving, I usually check on the counters, you know, just to make sure there's nothing that's open that's going to fall off and spill.
I suppose when it's worse for you is when we're up late at night, everyone's partying and you're already driving and people go to bed and just leave a bottle sitting out. So it has, you know, it can just do whatever it wants and fall on the floor and shatter.
And that's happened several times.
That the worst one that I had is I was on the Jayhawks bus and the fridge swung open and a 2-liter bottle of ginger kombucha.
Oh no.
Shattered and exploded on the floor because it was pressurized and it just smelled like vinegar for the next like 2 weeks. It was horrible.
I remember when a bottle of like tequila broke one time and the front lounge just smelled like tequila for a few days after that.
I got no problem with that, but
I mean, when it's like the morning, it's not really the first thing you want to smell.
Yeah.
You want to smell that.
Another
good,
thing
fresh
that bugs
bagel.
Me too is when people will leave an open beer up in the driver's compartment.
Oh man, that is such disrespect. Yeah.
I always chuck it out, but you know, it's just that
peepers. Oh, excuse me.
Yeah, that is a no go to zone for me. I don't even, that's like a bunk area for me. Like you just don't even look at it. Like you don't mess with it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I don't mind guys being up there or whatever. You know, a lot of guys come up to talk to their wives or girlfriends or.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
And you know, that doesn't bother me. And another pet peeve of mine is when people leave their clothes up front, like hanging on the grab rail.
Ooh.
They'll dry out a t-shirt or something that they wore during the show or something. They'll hang it.
And I know who does that in our crew.
I know exactly who does that.
Yeah, for sure. We won't say
we won't
names
call
here.
Call any
like
names
I said, I got
show.
No problem with it. Do it, but when you go to bed, take it with you. You know, I don't need to be smelling your stinky t-shirt.
And the jump seat's an interesting place in the bus because I feel like, I think you're one of the rare drivers, Gary, where I feel comfortable being up in the jump seat with you. But so many drivers, if you sit up there, it just feels so uncomfortable.
I don't mind the company at all. I enjoy
that's awesome, man.
But it's because you're fun to talk to, but a lot of drivers are really weird.
I've had some great conversation with people up there. I was out with Warren Haynes one time.
The best.
I was out with Warren Haynes, and he didn't have Government Mule. He had Ashes to Dust band. And a guy came up with a banjo. It was during the day, and we're going to Portland, I think. And he came up with a banjo and said, "Do you mind?" He sat up there playing his banjo, you know, and I said, "No, that's fine. I thought it was fun." You know, then another guy came up with a mandolin. And so the two of them sat there playing and singing. And, you know, I mean, I thought it was great. I mean, I had them all.
That's the scene from a movie right there. Just driving down the road on a banjo.
I thought it was great. You know, so I don't mind that at all. I know there are some drivers that don't like people up there.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, to me, I welcome the company. I don't know. I don't know. They don't want to be distracted but you know, I mean, you can have people up there without being distracted. I mean, you know, I mean, I had the drummer for Black Veil Brides used to sit up with me, you know, most nights and we talked about all kinds of UFOs, ghosts. I mean, you know, just anything, you know.
You ever see anything strange on the road like that? Like ghosts or UFOs speaking of? Anything like that you were like, huh, what did I just see?
No.
Okay.
That's because none of it's real, everyone.
Bigfoot?
No, never saw Bigfoot.
Okay.
I've got a more personal question for you, Gary.
Yes.
I've always thought like driving a bus is a really lonely job.
It is.
Because most of the time you drive at night when everyone's asleep and then you just go to the hotel and go to sleep. How do you deal with that and how do you enjoy that lifestyle or not enjoy it?
Well, it is, you know, because a lot of people have a misconception, I think, about all of our lives on the road. I mean, they don't know the reality of it. They think it's just fun and games. And, you know, they don't see you guys working 12, 13, 14 hours a day, you know. And for a driver, it is a pretty lonely existence. Because, you know, we drive all night with nobody up, just us. You know, we get to the venue. You know, we may, you know, have lunch. And then we go to the hotel. Or, you know, sometimes we go to the hotel earlier, but, you know, then we have our meals alone at the hotel. We go to sleep by ourselves. We come back. Lots of times the band's asleep. So, you know, it's a very solitary life on the road.
Yeah.
What about when you get back home? How do you adapt back to, like, you know, your normal schedule? How long does it take? Or
No time at all.
How do you
No time at all. Because when my kids were in school, you know, because whenever I came home, they would stay with me.
Okay.
So when they were in school, I had to get up at 6 o'clock every morning to take them to school, to get them ready to go, you know, take them out, drive them up to school. So, I got right into the routine
right
really
into the groove. Yeah,
when I got
you
home.
Have to.
But it's totally. Tough when you've been home for a little bit, and like those first couple nights on tour are tough when yeah. you're trying to adjust to the new schedule. Because even when you know if you've got like a day or two drive to go pick up the band, you're usually doing it during the day, and you know keeping a somewhat normal schedule. And so those first couple nights on a tour are tough. And then some tours, you know, will keep, you know, they'll leave 2 o'clock every night. You know, they try and keep it the same. But then there are some tours where, you know, sometimes you're leaving at 11 o'clock at night. Sometimes you're leaving at 6 in the morning. Sometimes it's 3 in the morning. You know, it just jumps all around. So your system's really, really messed up.
Do you enjoy it, though? Because I think it's really interesting because we have such different lives on the road. Because I think for the crew members, it's the exact opposite where we're with people 24/7. We eat together, we work together, we sleep together. It's just, it's nonstop. So, I mean, is it fun for you? Do you like that kind
of
solitary?
No, it is. I mean, you know, one of the stupidest questions I get is, you know, I get people say, do you like driving? You know, and I just look at them. It's like, it's what I do for a living. You know, if I hated it, I wouldn't be doing it.
Amen, you know? Brother.
So, no, I mean, I've always enjoyed driving. Mm-hmm. You know, even before I got into commercial driving, I loved, you know, long road trips in my car.
I'm the same way.
This country is beautiful, dude.
It is, but we see most of it at night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so it's, you know, until the sun comes up, but you know, we get to see some amazing sunrise.
Exactly. Yeah.
And
I'm
you
sure,
know,
man.
I didn't realize how beautiful America was until I started touring. And when I was driving, mm-hmm. I was driving a Sprinter back then, you know, a Sprinter with a trailer. So I was the one seeing everything.
Yeah. You even get to see more on those van tours, man.
I'm
so happy that I got to do some of those van tours and see the country that way. Cause you're really just staring out the window on a bus. Sometimes you're in your bunk or, you know, just in the front lounge with the windows down watching TV, whatever, you know, you're not really just focused on the outside, but when you're in a van, you're kind of forced to, and you really get to see some cool
and
stuff.
It's incredible. Yeah. It's truly incredible.
Yeah. I mean, there's just so many beautiful places in this country and up in Canada. Like you go through like the Canadian Rockies up there and stuff. I mean, the drive amazing. From like Edmonton to Vancouver,
that's a long
just
one.
An amazing drive.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so
beautiful.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. And that doesn't matter the season, any season. It's
I'm sure. don't like being up there in the winter. No.
Never. Yeah. Me neither. No. I say it's beautiful, but I don't want to be there.
Yeah. It can be beautiful, but
yeah.
The winter, come on. The winter is epic. As a Minnesota man, I love the winter. I'm stoked for it to start
this
snowing.
This guy is weird, dude.
Yeah, well, drivers don't like to snow that much.
That's you know, I'm sure.
Because you guys don't realize what we go through sometimes, you know, with
no,
the
for
weather.
Sure.
You know, you guys are sleeping in your bunks and don't realize. Because I had a tour one time it was early spring, but we mm-hmm. were going up into Wyoming somewhere. And it was late May and it was like, it was whiteout conditions. For like about 110 miles. And me and another bus were running together. And, you know, he even said, hey, you know, think we should pull over? It's getting pretty bad, you know? And so we stopped on the side of the road just so, you know, because both of us had to use the bathroom. And one of the crew guys in the next day told me that he had woken up, looked out the window and, you know, saw all the snow and we're on the side of the road. And he thought we got stuck on top of a mountain. You know, so you, I mean, and we were running like, you know, 20, 25, 30 miles an hour, you know, all through that snow. I mean, and it was like, you know, you get that snow that's coming at you.
Oh yeah.
You know, it looks like warp speed from Spaceballs.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's what it looks like. And that wears you out fast. Cause it looks like you're not going anywhere. It looks like you're not moving. And you know, and you're concentrating on it, and it wears you out mentally and physically. You know, and there's been times we've had such bad wind and everything. You know, and
do you remember driving specifically that you were just like, "This has been the worst one. This is it."
Oh, well, that one that I just told you about was pretty bad. I mean, because that was, I mean, it was whiteout conditions for 100 and something miles. You couldn't see 6 feet in front of you. You know, luckily there was no one else out on the road, but. And then one time going through Chicago, I got caught in a microburst. And I thought the bus was going to tip over. It got that bad.
Oh my God.
I mean, I could feel leaning. It started leaning. It got that bad.
Holy.
Luckily, I had no one on the bus. I was going to pick them up.
It gets nasty up there, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you guys, when you're sleeping, you know, you don't realize a lot of times what we had to go through to get you to where we're going.
Also, because thankfully, Gary's an amazing driver, so we sleep like babies. But
like babies.
So we've been lucky enough, Gary, to not have a major breakdown with you, I don't think ever. But do you have like a story about like your worst?
No, we had one in on the way to New Orleans that time.
Oh, that's right.
Because it was funny because I was talking with Colin that night. And I said, you know, I've never been on the side of the road with this bus. And of course, that night we're on the side of the road for a day off in New Orleans. So we didn't get there till like, you know, it's like what, 6 or 7 at night. So, you know, kind of screwed you guys out of a day off.
No, that's really when New Orleans starts picking up though.
It was an engine breakdown, right?
What happened was it was a belt broke. A belt snapped, but took the whole like housing with it.
Classic.
Oh. So I thought it was because, you know, I noticed, you know, everything just dropped on it. So I saw, you know, and the temperature started going up. So I said, I'll probably just do the main belt. So I opened the doors, I look, and I said, yeah, the belt's gone. You know, so I just go get the new belt. I was going to put it on, but then I go to put it on. There's nothing to put it on. Everything just got torn off.
Oh, wow.
And the problem with that was it's a Prevost part. So not everybody has it. So there was a shop not far from there, and I drove over there. You know, thing cool off. When they opened up in the morning, I drove over. He said, yeah, we get the part, but it won't be till tomorrow. We have to order it. So that's when they sent the mechanic down from Nashville to fix it. You know, it took him like 15 minutes. Just, you know, unbolt. You know, there's 4 bolts, unbolt, you know, put the new one on.
Put the new one.
Put the belts on, off he went. But it was just, you know, he had to drive from Nashville down to, we're in Alabama's, there's a song.
Time Bomb.
Well, Montgomery. No, we're in Montgomery. We're in Montgomery.
Oh, okay. So that to me, that's a pretty minor breakdown based on some of the other things that I've experienced on tour. So what was your worst breakdown? Like the worst thing that happened to you while driving
the bus? I haven't had like a real bad one.
That's how good of a driver Gary is.
That's why he's a man, a myth, and a legend.
It's not me. It's, you know, it's just the bus. I mean, I've been lucky. I mean, you know, I've known guys. I had a guy on my bus one time who said he's been in 10 bus accidents where the bus is like rolling.
Oh my God.
You know,
dude, maybe do something else.
Whoa. You know, another guy said, you know, he's been on one to burn to the ground. And we've had buses burn, you know, luckily it's never been any of mine.
Actually, we have too. Lois, you weren't there for that, but we had one burn up at Del Mar, the main circuit panel in the cab of the bus.
Oh,
shorted out and lit fire. Yeah, that was we had to drive back all the way to Santa Barbara from Del Mar with no AC, no 120.
That's probably a good smell inside the bus of just burnt just terrible.
Well, Prevost had one model year. They were having a lot of problems with the buses catching fire, and it was all the same thing. Because we had one. It was out with sticks. It made the news. It was in Philadelphia, and it burned to the ground.
What was the problem with that front panel in the cab?
No, it was in the back.
Oh, really?
By the exhaust, yeah.
Was it like a glue or something that was just
flammable? I don't know, but it was. I mean, they had a lot of fires at that same model year. I mean, it was something with, you know, something with the design that year.
Oh man.
Wow.
But no, I've been lucky. I haven't had any, you know, major breakdown. Well, no, I did. And this is a kind of a funny story. We were going from Seattle to Spokane, Washington.
Yeah.
Another I was driving along. I got the cruise set, and all of a sudden it felt like the cruise kicked off. Cause sometimes they'll do that. They'll just shut off by themselves, you know, and the bus starts slowing down. But then I used accelerator and nothing. So I was like a mile from a rest area. I pulled in, you know, and it was gone. It was done. So we, you know, we had to get I was pulling a trailer too. And we had to show that night. And the bus had to be towed in, had to be put on a flatbed trailer to be towed to a shop.
I've never seen that.
And
a bus on a flatbed, man.
Yeah, yeah. And they ended up doing an in-frame on it.
What's an in-frame?
Yeah, rebuilding the engine.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that was like a $20,000 bill, I think, on the bus. But anyway, so we had to find something that would take all the people and that pull the trailer.
What did you guys do?
So what, near Walla Walla, Washington, some little town. Anyway, they found a stretch limo Hummer. and I got a picture of it too. They found a stretch limo Hummer that would fit everybody and pull the trailer. So that took them to the next show. And then we were going to Boise from there. And the office immediately sent a new bus from the shop with two drivers to meet them in Boise. They couldn't get there that night. You know, just not possible. So that limo driver took them from Spokane to Boise in the stretch limo Hummer.
Oh, my God.
I mean, he thought it was a great adventure. But, you know, every time I think I want to buy a bus, something like that would happen, because I saw just, you know, the bill on the limo alone was $5,000. And then, you know, the $20,000 repair bill for the bus itself.
Oh,
but then, you know, plus then, you know, they had to fly me home.
Man, I have a similar story like that. We had a show in Philadelphia. I forget where we were coming from, but obviously west to east. And the bus breaks down just entering Pennsylvania somewhere, small little town, like always, you know, you're never in a huge city where you need all the, where you got all the parts. And then we basically, it's just getting later and later. I forget what was happening, but basically the bus wasn't going to make it. And it got to the point where, like, we need to find a ride right now, or we're not going to make it to the show at all. And we ended up linking up with these two dudes that had, I forget how we got to them, but basically one of them had a pickup truck and then the other one had a Prius. And we got all the essential gear we needed to put on the show. And they drove us to Philadelphia. And we got there right at set change. And we pulled it off. We went right on time. And it was like winter time. And this dude had the windows down on the Prius, just chain smoking.
Oh, my God.
And dude, this was with the Expendables. So, like, I'm like, you know, those guys are like, they're just tall and big. And I'm like right in the middle seat between these two huge dudes in like winter jackets. And it's just one of those situations where, like, the people that saw the show that night had no idea what.
I always find it amazing that no matter what time we get there, you guys always end up pulling it off.
Dude, the show must go on.
I mean, normally the show takes, you know, if it's 5 hours to set up or six or whatever it is, but if you've got a half hour to do it, you do it.
Isn't that funny how, like, sometimes we take off, like, 2-3 hours to get to sound check, and in situations like that, you're like, we have to go, dude, right now.
Let's go.
Yeah, and the right. people watching the show have no idea all the hectic stuff that went on.
That always makes me laugh, dude, and I love it. I appreciate it so much, because those moments make it so much fun. Like, when you get them done,
for sure.
During when it's going on, it's a little bit stressful, you know, but that's what makes this job so much fun, the difference.
It's always a different day.
It's always a little different adventure, man.
I miss going to Carolina Beach this past summer.
Oh, me too, man. We brought that up on our last episode about going to Shuck and Shack and spending some days in Carolina Beach and basically just giving away all your per diem and oysters and seafood.
But it's nice, though. I mean, because it's there's a place to park the bus.
Yeah.
A nice hotel. It's right on the water.
Yeah.
You know, and then there's plenty of places to eat right there. So,
and you got Shuck and Shack, which is the best thing in the world. I remember last time we were there, I think we hit Shuck and Shack 4 times in a day. I think I spent $200 at Shuck and Shack.
The band ought to buy one. They ought to franchise one out in Santa Barbara.
Oh, fuck yeah. That place is legendary.
Totally.
Oh, man.
But, you're asking me about, you know, if I like this job and all that stuff. You know, like I said, it's not as exciting as a lot of people think it is. Because I've had people say, oh, I just party with rock stars. It's like, no, it's, you know, this is a job.
Yeah.
You know, I got their lives in my hands every night, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, I have experienced things that I never would have got to experience had I not been doing this. When we were out with Bush, we had a day off. Well, they had a day off. I didn't have a day off. I had to drive from Michigan to Niagara Falls. But the promoter had helicopter rides arranged for everybody over the falls.
Oh, wow.
So we all went over and, you know, and they sent vans for us. So I didn't have to drive the bus over. you know? And so we had helicopter rides over the falls. And then from there, we went to the jet boats that they have in the river that, I mean, these things like hit the waves and it's like a submarine. Cause like it goes under the water almost, you know,
comes, you know,
flying over. So that was, you know, something I never would have done on my own. I didn't have to pay for it. We were out with Nickelback and they had a, they rented out a movie theater in Boise, Idaho on a day off. And we had a private screening of Iron Man 2. And
that's
they had
awesome.
Coolers
that's
full of so beer cool. and wine. And then they had like three or four people from the theater that were going to get us popcorn or hot dogs or whatever. So that was fun. And they also took us out for the driver's dinner to Moe's nice. Steakhouse in Milwaukee. And that was the best meal I ever had in my life.
Really?
Wow.
My steak was $52 and that was in the middle. You know, and we had a private dining room with our own bar and all that stuff. But yeah, we could get anything we want. And you know, I don't like to take advantage. I know they got the money. You know, and there were 33 of us, I think, in that meal. Because it was the bus drivers and truck drivers with the band and like the accountant and stuff. And the band was drinking wine. I don't know if they were drinking that expensive one. But, you know, so I didn't get the lobster tail at my steak, you know. Like I said, I just don't like to take advantage. And then when I, you know, they started bringing it out, I saw other people get the lobster tail. I should have got it. You know? but they ended up bringing out trays of appetizers, including lobster tail and stuff.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I ended up getting it anyway.
Got and a piece anyways.
So, yeah. So I'm thinking that dinner cost between like $6,000 and $9,000. Somewhere
easy.
Between there.
Yeah, for you know? Sure.
And I tell you, I don't know why they get such a bum rap from people, but they are the most generous band. You know, they care of their people.
Oh man.
You know? And they took the crew out for a dinner one night in another city, but this was just for the drivers.
That's so nice, dude.
You know?
That's super.
And then, and I was out with the Bacon brothers, Kevin Bacon and his brother.
Oh.
We had a day off in Lake Tahoe and we're staying at the resort where he was playing and it was during the NBA playoffs. So the nightclub is closed during the week, but they open it up for us. And we had like these huge oversized leather chairs, this giant screen that we're watching the game on. We had a bar right there, but we had like, you know, servers that would come around and fill our wine glass when it got too low. And, you know, and then take our food orders. So I had prime rib, shrimp cocktail. You know, I think I even got cheesecake for dessert or something. I don't know.
That's awesome. That's fantastic. Well, so we're going to wrap up soon, Gary, but I have one last story I want you to tell, which is one of my favorite stories about you. And it involves the Santa Barbara Bull.
Yep. That's probably my most memorable thing that's ever happened.
No way.
Yeah. I was shooting the show and I'm up, you know, on inside the barrier. And these two girls were behind me, you know, because I was sitting down. I wasn't taking a shot or whatever. And I feel this hand on the side of my face, you know, and I turn, and this girl's like stroking my cheek, you know, and her friend says, "You can't touch him like that." And I said, "She can touch me any way she wants. I got no rules against that, you know."
And then, I'll allow it.
And then when Mike introduced me, they leaned over and kissed me
in unison.
Both kissed me on the cheek, and they got video of it. And, you know, and when I was looking up and I saw the look on Micah's face, you know, then he saw this, you know, it was one of the most memorable things that's ever happened to me.
Oh, you man. Know,
that people think that's what my life is like all the time. You know, they think that's what my life is like on the road. And that's the only time it's ever happened. And he is the only, that is the only band that's ever singled me out and introduced me to the audience.
Dude, that was such a special moment. I was so happy to be there for that.
Look how well
it was. Something I will always remember. It was one of my,
probably
the most memorable thing that's ever happened to me. So it was, and I mean, I've still got that little gift, if that's how you pronounce it, you know, with the video guy made.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen it, but.
I mean,
I was looking at that. I just laugh every time I look at it.
That made the rounds in the tour stream for a few weeks after that. That was definitely well circulated. All right, Gary. Well, thank you so much for being on. It's been an absolute pleasure. It's so good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you. I didn't know what to expect from this. I didn't know what it was going to be like, and you know, but
yeah, just shooting the shit. That's
all it is.
Just
talking to you guys, yeah. You know,
just hanging out, telling stories, giving advice.
Well, all right. We will see you guys next week on the next podcast. Thanks for tuning in, and thank you to our guest, Gary. Like we said before, the man, the myth, the legend, amazing photographer, and someone who does have amazing stories, even if he doesn't believe it himself. So thanks, Gary.
Love you, Gary. Thank you, man.
You're welcome. Bye.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. Remember to give us a like, subscribe, and a follow on Spotify, Apple Podcast, and on Instagram at StageRightPodcast. Thank you. See you next week.